This podcast is sponsored by the book, The Concept, A Critical and Honest Look at God and Religion, by Bo Bennett. Challenge your beliefs and explore faith through science and reason. Discover more at godtheconcept.com.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. It's fantastic to have you here for another journey of discovery. This time we're diving into the book of 2 Timothy. And a listener actually requested this one, specifically looking at it through a secular lens, which should make things pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique perspective. Most of the time we encounter 2 Timothy, you know, within a religious context. So taking a more critical and historical, maybe even a bit skeptical approach should lead to some, you know, thought-provoking insights.
For sure. For those who might not be as familiar with 2 Timothy, it's traditionally thought of as a letter written by Paul the Apostle to his, you know, younger colleague Timothy, offering guidance as Paul's facing imprisonment in Rome. But the source material we're looking at today suggests there's, more to the story than meets the eye.
Absolutely. One of the first things that pops out is this question of authorship. Our sources point out that a lot of modern scholars actually doubt that Paul wrote 2 Timothy at all. They suggest it might have been written by a follower, maybe even after Paul's death.
Okay, so we're starting off with a mystery already. Why is this question of who actually wrote it such a big deal?
Well, think about it this way. Imagine you get some advice from a mentor, someone you really admire and respect. Then you find out the letter wasn't really from them. It was from someone trying to sound like them. It definitely changes how you view that advice, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It makes you question the whole purpose of the letter.
Yeah.
Maybe even its authenticity.
Exactly. This practice of writing under someone else's name is called pseudepigrapha. And it was actually pretty common in ancient times. Authors would sometimes use the name of a respected figure to give their writing more authority.
So it's like they were trying to borrow someone else's credibility to get their message heard.
Exactly. Yeah. And understanding that, you know, it changes how we think about authority and authenticity when we're looking at these ancient texts.
That means we can't just take everything at face value.
Mm-hmm.
We have to think critically about who might be speaking and why.
You got it. It adds a whole new level of depth to the whole thing.
Okay, so let's dig into the content of the letter itself. One thing that really struck me was how much it emphasizes enduring suffering. Like, as a part of following the gospel, there's that verse where it says, "Indeed, all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted." It almost makes it sound like hardship is a good thing, like a badge of honor.
That's a really interesting observation. It's important to keep in mind the historical context here. Remember, early Christians were often persecuted for their beliefs. It was a dangerous time to be a follower of Jesus.
So maybe talking about suffering in that way, there was a way to kind of encourage them and prepare them for the challenges they were facing.
It's very possible. Yeah. Imagine living in a world where your beliefs could get you ostracized, imprisoned, even killed. Framing suffering as a necessary part of faith might have been a way to build resilience, you know,
yeah,
to help them cope with the very real threats they were facing.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But for someone reading this today, you know, maybe they're not facing those same kinds of dangers. This focus on suffering might feel a little jarring, even disturbing.
Absolutely. Our modern society, especially in the West, puts a lot of value on well-being, on individual happiness, on avoiding suffering. So reading something that seems to almost glorify hardship can create a real disconnect.
It makes you wonder if that message is still relevant today. If someone is going through hard times, should they just accept it as part of their faith?
That's a tough question. And I think it's one that each person has to grapple with based on their own beliefs and experiences.
Shifting gears a little bit.
Mm.
Another part of the text that stood out was, the passage about gender roles, specifically the verse that says, "I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man. She must be silent." But that idea that women should just learn quietly and submit, it feels very outdated.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider how much progress has been made in terms of gender equality.
It definitely does. That verse has been used throughout history to justify silencing women, keeping them in subordinate roles, which is obviously problematic from a modern perspective.
It's hard to reconcile a teaching like that with the idea of a just and loving God.
Yeah.
Especially considering, you know, the progress we've made towards equality.
It is a challenge, for sure. And it highlights the complexity of trying to interpret ancient texts through a modern lens. How do we make sense of these teachings that seem so outdated when compared to our own evolving values and understanding of the world?
Yeah, it really is a question a lot of people wrestle with.
Yeah.
You know, trying to find that balance. And there's no easy answer.
Yeah.
But it definitely encourages us to approach these texts with a, critical and discerning eye, recognizing the historical context, but also acknowledging that our values and our understanding of the world have, you know, evolved over time.
Right. It's like we have to hold those two things in tension, the historical and the modern. And speaking of things that might feel a little out of step with modern thinking, another passage that jumped out at me was the one that warns against godless chatter and worldly philosophies. It almost sounds like it's rejecting anything that, you know, challenges the established faith.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting that you picked up on that kind of defensive tone. It's important to remember that, you know, early Christianity was this brand new movement. It was trying to find its footing in a world full of different beliefs and philosophies. Imagine trying to, you know, nurture a young plant in the middle of a storm. You'd naturally want to shield it from anything that could damage it.
So you're saying this warning against godless chatter, it was a way to protect that early Christian community from ideas that might have threatened its core beliefs.
Exactly. It's like saying be careful about the ideas you let in, because they might lead you away from the truth as we understand it.
But wouldn't that go against the idea that truth should be able to stand up to scrutiny? Like, if something's really true, shouldn't it be strong enough to hold up even when people question it and debate it?
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And it really gets at one of the fundamental tensions in human thought, the balance between faith and reason. Should we accept things just because we believe them? Or should we put them to the test, you know, use critical thinking and look for evidence?
Yeah, it's a big question. And it feels even more relevant today when we have access to so much information and so many different viewpoints. How do we navigate that tension between believing and questioning?
It's something each person has to work out for themselves. There's no one right answer. But I think developing a discerning mind is key. You know, we can approach things with both faith and reason, acknowledging the power of belief, but also engaging our critical thinking skills and looking for evidence.
That makes a lot of sense. It's about finding that middle ground where faith and reason can coexist and even complement each other.
Exactly. And this whole tension between faith and reason, it ties into another part of 2 Timothy that we haven't really touched on yet, that emphasis on protecting the good deposit of Christian teaching.
Oh, yeah, that phrase. I'll be honest, I wasn't totally sure what that was referring to.
It's basically talking about the core beliefs and doctrines of the Christian faith as the author of 2 Timothy understood them. And the text really stresses how important it is for Timothy to guard those teachings, to protect them from being corrupted or distorted,
wow.
You know, keep the faith pure.
It's like giving someone a precious treasure and saying, guard this with your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this focus on protecting the good deposit, it really underscores that defensive mindset we were talking about earlier. There's a sense of urgency there, like the truth is fragile and it needs to be actively protected.
And that brings us back to that question. Does being so defensive actually help us get closer to the truth? Does it encourage people to be open-minded and to explore new ideas? Or does it create an environment of fear where people are afraid to question anything?
It's a really important question to consider. You know, if we're always on guard against anything that challenges what we believe, are we closing ourselves off to new insights that could actually be valuable?
Right. It's such a tricky balance trying to find that middle ground between holding on to what we believe in and being open to new perspectives.
Yeah.
That could challenge us and help us grow.
Absolutely. And that brings us back to the heart of why we're looking at 2 Timothy through a secular lens. It's not about trying to discredit the text or dismiss anyone's personal beliefs, but it's about engaging with it on a deeper, more thoughtful level. You know, really questioning its assumptions and considering the historical context.
It's like we're peeling back the layers of history, trying to understand the deeper meaning and the stories behind the text.
I love that analogy. And just like with any historical artifact,
yeah,
the more we understand its context to the time period it came from, the more we can appreciate it.
So it's about seeing the whole picture,
yeah,
the content and the context.
Exactly. And when we approach 2 Timothy with that kind of awareness, we can appreciate its historical importance while also recognizing how much our thinking and our values have changed over time.
It's like we're having a conversation across the centuries, recognizing the echoes of the past, but also acknowledging how far we've come.
That's beautiful. And I think that's what makes this exploration so valuable. It's not about finding all the answers. It's about engaging in that ongoing dialogue, that exploration of ideas that have shaped human thought for centuries.
Yeah, it does feel like we've uncovered more questions than answers.
Yeah.
But, you know, in a good way, it's been really thought-provoking. We've got the mystery of who actually wrote the letter, then all these different perspectives on things like suffering and gender roles, and that tension between faith and reason, which feels super relevant even today.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Sometimes the most valuable lessons come from wrestling with those tough questions. you know, really digging into the complexity of it all.
That's a good point. And it kind of highlights what makes this secular analysis so interesting. I'm not trying to say the text is wrong or anything like that, or dismiss anyone's faith. It's more about encouraging people to think critically and engage with these ideas on a deeper level.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that these ancient texts are products of their time. You know, they reflect the cultural norms and the understanding of the world back then.
So taking that historical context into account is super important when we're trying to make sense of it all.
Absolutely. It's like trying to understand a piece of art without knowing anything about the artist or the time period it came from. You might appreciate the colors and the shapes, but you're missing a whole layer of meaning.
So it's about getting the full picture, the content and the context.
Exactly. And when we approach 2 Timothy with that kind of awareness, we can appreciate its historical significance, but also recognize how much our thinking and our values have evolved since then.
It's like we're having this conversation across centuries, acknowledging the echoes of the past, but also seeing how far we've come.
I love that. And I think that's what makes this kind of exploration so enriching. It's not about finding all the answers. It's about being part of this ongoing dialogue, this exploration of ideas that have shaped human thought for, you know, thousands of years.
It's a journey of discovery, one that pushes us to think critically, question our assumptions, and, you know, expand our understanding of both the past and the present.
Exactly. And who knows, maybe this conversation will inspire our listeners to keep exploring. You know, maybe they'll dive deeper into 2 Timothy or look into biblical scholarship or even explore the history of religious thought. It's all about sparking that curiosity, that desire to keep learning and exploring.
That's what we love to see. And on that note, we'll let you go for now to ponder these ideas and continue your own explorations.
Keep those brains buzzing, and we'll see you next time.
Until then, take care.